Enough. Let's get the recorder on. Maybe they'll stop.
I have it all on, but there's no light. Do we have light bulb issues? Okay.
Can Dave hear it though? You're left live 5x5? All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Colquhoun meeting in the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It's April 10th. 2013, like I said, a little after 10. I don't have any opening comments, but it's a regular scheduled meeting. I'd see if my colleagues, Randy or Julie, have anything.
My only comment is I don't know if this is the most interesting of the meetings that we've had so far, or if I'm understanding more of the stuff and having more questions, or if it's just my portfolio, but just looking forward to the meeting. There are a lot of interesting topics to talk about.
Perfect. Thank you, Randy.
I just have one comment to make. Today is the Capitol Classic basketball tournament, Special Olympics fundraiser at 11:30 down in the Great Hall. And so I encourage anybody who's interested in supporting the cause to go down there for lunch. And also I'm on a team, so we need to finish by 11:30 because I got to go stretch.
I heard you were the leader of the team.
No, I'm not a leader, but I'm a member.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I suspect we'll be able to pull that off. All right. With that, there are a few items on consent. I would move passage.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Just to be clear, the two items on the
right
auctioneer and the auction clerk applications are removed from that, even though they're listed on there, but you notice they're moved to
right item
the regular agenda. Yeah.
Very perfect.
So just to be clear about that.
Good catch.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. Okay, moving on to the regular agenda. Item BK1. Item BK1 has been withdrawn, but it does tie in very closely to item BK2. So therefore, I'll go with item BK2. I move the Commission adopt the consent order in the Public Service Commission Damage Prevention Enforcement Action concerning Sean Swanson, case number PU13-36.
Second.
The little background on this case. Sean Swanson, has a company doing business as FM Concrete, based out of Georgetown, Minnesota. Otter Tail Company, we're well aware of, Minnesota Corporation, that basically Mr. Swanson was alleged to strike one of Otter Tail's lines. On January 9th of this year, the Commission received a third-party damage complaint from Scott Fritz, one call administrator for Otter Tail. Our PSC staff conducted an investigation, and basically Mr. Swanson was down in the Wapton area doing some concrete work, and he failed to call before you dig. There's a variety of things that can exempt someone from calling before they dig, such as they've got an agreement with the company ahead of time. There's a bona fide emergency in place. But in the staff's investigation, there was this excavation was not being done in time of emergency. He did not notify North Dakota One Call. He had no agreement with the company. The commission's jurisdiction at this point, pending legislation will increase our potential, the violations that we can levy, but in this case, $5,000 is the cap. Mr. Swanson acknowledges the time of signing this consent decree that he's aware of his rights, he's waived his rights to a hearing, and basically he admits that he did what the staff alleged he did. And so at this point, this order will fine him $1,000 that he will need to pay immediately. And I should also note, too, that in this case, what's interesting is the damages that he caused were approximately $4,400. And one of the things that actually staff and myself held off on this a little bit, we wanted to make sure that he paid for all those damages before we finalized this decision. So he did pay up for all the damages, the $4,400, and he will be asked to pay this $1,000 fine. So, you know, the fine is one thing, but also it's very important, I think, that these companies, when they make these mistakes, they pay for the damages. Luckily, in this case, no one was hurt, but this is our continued enforcement effort to make sure folks utilize call before they dig, and if they don't, they're held accountable. We're up to almost 16 of these that we've done over the last couple years, and with the legislation that's working its way through both the House and the Senate, I'm hopeful that it'll be used as a deterrent, so we'll see less of these, but it'll just be interesting to see how it all plays out. So with that, I don't have any other comments. I think this is well within very reasonable.
My only comment, Mr. Chairman, would be that I appreciate that the utility called to let us know that this happened and filed the complaint so we could follow up on it and actually enforce the laws. So I think that we're all partners, and there's a bunch of different steps in the process, but the first step is filing the complaint with us so we know what's going on and can follow up on it and see if enforcement action is in order. So
no,
just an otter tail.
Absolutely. Commissioner Fedorchak pointed out the key step is someone's got to file the complaint. And we've had cases in the commission where we're aware of an incident that's taken place, such as the one in the northwestern part of the state where there was a fatality that took place, and nobody filed the complaint. And that's where then our staff, based on what we recommended and what they recommended, the staff actually filed the complaint. So there's that fine line where, you know, if something catches a radar screen, we may pursue it. But most of these cases, we're not aware of it unless someone like Otter Tail or an individual reports them. And then we can do what we do because it seems pretty straightforward once we're aware of it. You call the one-call records, and you can see very quickly what they've done or haven't done. So.
Okay. Here we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, that concludes the items in my portfolio for today. Commissioner Crisman.
Chairman, I move the commission approve revision number 8 to surface coal mining permit number ACPG-9701 held by American Coaloid Company for the Page and Perkins Mines to identify the next five-year coal removal sub-area within the permit area and to update other information and plans in the permit.
Second.
Mr. Chairman, on January 2nd, 2013, American Coaloid Company submitted the application for revision number 8 for its Page and Perkins Mine areas between Reeder and Gascoyne. This revision identifies the next five-year coal removal sub-area and addresses several items that were noted during the Reclamation Division's pre-renewal review of the permit. The revision updates the legal, financial, and ownership information, groundwater monitoring plans, adjacent surface and mineral ownership information, and mining and reclamation plans. Lignite removal is expected to continue in this permit area for several years. The bond currently totals $1,092,445 and is adequate at this time. The notice was published once a week for four consecutive weeks in January and early February. We also notified the appropriate agencies, affected landowners, and advisory committee members. No objections to this revision application were received. I would also add that getting a little bit away from this revision and into the next agenda item, which is at the same site, this is a revision, the next is a renewal, and that basically is just that. This changes some things with the ownership and that sort of thing, just, you know, keeping everything updated. And the next one, which will be very similar, is the renewal for another 5 years.
Do we have a motion and second? Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, and the second motion, Mr. Chairman, I move the commission approve renewal number 3 to surface coal mining permit number ACPG-9701 held by the American Coaloid Company to extend the permit area for another 5 years until April 22nd, 2018.
Second.
On January 2nd, 2013, American Coaloid Company filed the application for renewal number 3 to continue mining and reclamation operations within the existing permit area for another 5 years. This covers 507.44 acres, all in Bowman County. As I said before, lignite removal from this permit area is expected to continue for several years. The notice was again published once a week for four consecutive weeks in January and early February. We also notified the appropriate agencies, affected landowners, and advisory committee members, and we received no objections to the renewal application.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Chairman, I'm looking for the order of things here.
The way I read it, RC3 is moved to RC5, so there's no RC3. The next item should be RC4, Ivan Ganji auctioneer license.
Okay. I move the commission approve the auctioneer license application for Ivan J. Ganji, Mandan, North Dakota.
Second.
Mr. Chairman, you know, this probably would... Ordinarily, and I'm going to kind of speak for the next one, which is the same gentleman's auction clerk license. These would probably have been and originally were on the consent calendar. I asked that they be removed because I wanted the whole commission to be aware of part of this whole thing. There's a question that we ask about if someone has ever been convicted of a felony, and if in both these instances the answer is no. We also asked if they have ever been the defendant in any misdemeanor proceedings, excluding traffic violations, and he checked no. However, in following up with him, there were two incidents where he was in fact a defendant in a proceeding. One, when he was a security officer in a lounge and there was some trouble, and that case was dismissed. And another in an incident where he asserts that someone stole his and his wife's identification, and he did a citizen's arrest on the person, and a brouhaha broke out, I guess. And anyway, according to him, the charges again were dismissed, and the person who he arrested was sent to prison. So they were both dismissed. I don't think this causes a pattern such that we would deny this. Although he did technically check the box and say no. But I guess I'm still of the opinion that we approve this, but I just didn't feel comfortable doing it on the consent calendar without making you both aware of that.
I have just a question. If you're charged with something and it's dismissed before it goes to trial, are you a defendant in a case? At what point do you become a defendant, I guess? Not that it really matters here, but it's curious to me if you are a defendant or if you're not because it was dismissed early on.
I think that's some of the gray area, because we used to have that question a lot when I did recruiting, what the kids would put in, because if they were exonerated of all charges, they never would put it down in the forms, and we kind of followed that guideline. But there's probably a legal interpretation, but I see the statement in here that he basically walked through the charges, and I would agree with what both you were saying. Because we had one case where we had an auctioneer that had been involved in a convicted felony dealing with misuse of money, and that one really caught our attention. We actually had a hearing on that one. But in this case, I agree. He's got a bond in place, and everything looks to be in order.
Regardless, I think it's appropriate that the staff followed up on it, and Absolutely. It's all cleared up, and so there's no harm done. Checking, right. For sure.
Now we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Mr. Chairman, I move the commission approve the auction clerk license application for Ivan J. Ganji, Mandan, North Dakota.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Is Anything else?
Well, Mr. Chairman. No, I think that's all of mine.
Okay, thank you. All right, we'll move over to Commissioner Fedorchak's portfolio. It's your nickel, Commissioner.
All right. I had to get a copy of the order. This one was changed so much. At the last minute, I didn't have the order here. So I move the commission to adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order in the request of Bakken Link Pipeline LLC for an amended route permit and application for waivers of procedures and time schedules concerning the construction by Bakken Link Pipeline LLC of approximately 132 miles of crude oil pipelines in Billings, Dunn, McKenzie, Stark, and Williams Counties, North Dakota, case number PU-10-218.
Second.
This was an interesting learning process, especially since it landed in our laps in February when Commissioner Christman and I had only been on board for about a month and a half. The Bakken Link Pipeline is a 132-mile pipeline that is going to carry crude from Beaver Lodge, North Dakota, near Ray, south to a rail facility at Freiburg, which is near Belfield. We provided the original certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit in February of 2012. And they came back to us, the company came back to the commission in September for some route changes and modifications to the proposed pipeline placement in order to accommodate some landowner requests and to allow a change in the original alignment near Watford City due to some development taking place there. Then in January 18th, they filed a request with the commission for three additional reroutes that were at landowners' request. Those are known as the Knapp, Lillibridge, and Hoffman reroutes, and one reroute due to the relocation of the Arrow receipt point, which is known as the Levang reroute, all of these in McKenzie County. In some of the cases, these reroutes there was some urgency in moving them along because they were in the construction process. They had equipment out there, and they wanted to keep things moving and not keep their staff and everybody waiting for a decision on the reroute. So we did what we thought best to protect the public interest and keep the project moving along. And we had a number of meetings in special meetings to discuss this. In February, we determined that we would delegate authority to staff to approve the Bakken Link reroute deviations, which went outside the designated corridor, with some stipulations. And so the Bakken Link was required to file verification that they had obtained landowner approval for the Levan reroute, file a certification that the reroutes would not impact any new exclusion or avoidance areas, file copies of environmental and cultural studies, file a copy of the State Historic Preservation Office's concurrence with a finding of no historical properties affected, and file confirmation from the local road authority that the Hoffman reroute would not affect plans for potential road improvements. Then we also determined that the staff approval would be subject to the subsequent issuance of a notice of opportunity for hearing. On February 8th, the staff approved the four reroutes. They received the certifications that we requested, and they approved the four reroutes, conditioned again on the expiration of the notice of opportunity for hearing. That opportunity expired, and we had an informal hearing on March 27th in the commission, here in the commission. And at that time, we received the certification that they had that we had requested, and so this order is a result of all of those proceedings. This project is again 132 miles long. It's understandable in a project of that size that they're probably going to have some reroutes and some changes like this. I think our goal as the commission is to make sure that we're protecting the public interest, making sure that All the rules are being followed, that the cultural and environmental resources are being protected, that landowners are being informed and are on board, and to, whenever possible, keep the projects rolling so that we can get these pipelines completed. This pipeline was originally estimated to cost $139 million. I can't speak to whether they're on track with that or not. They do hope to be completed and in operation by May of this year. So with that, any discussion from you guys?
No, I think...
Did I cover it?
No, I think that you set it up really good. I just maybe add a little background to it. As the commission was working through this order, if you will, legislation downstairs was being crafted to change the criteria which companies can change the route. So we kind of had one eye on downstairs what was going on with the company's ability to move things inside the corridor with also a tracking of what our current procedure is. And that's where we kind of came up with, I call it the hybrid system, where we agreed that if the companies would give us certification that they had not, that they had agreement, that all the affected groups agreed, the Historical Society, the SHPO, the Health Department, that we'd then go ahead and let staff have conditional approval of those reroutes. But then we still issued out the notice, held an informal hearing to give the public one more chance if something that the company maybe would have not had the opportunity to have the exact information, the public still had a chance to come in and to say their piece, which we did not have any input from the public. But going forward, it'll be interesting because one of the things that I've really struggled with in routing is the size of corridors. And so if you make the corridor nice and wide in the beginning, then companies will have a better ability to make changes inside the corridor to deal with things like this without having full commission involvement hearings. But if you make those corridors so wide, then companies will have the ability to site additional infrastructure inside the corridors. So I think that's one thing that we'll really be looking at closely now with the footprint law and now the changes in the siting laws. So we'll just have to see how it all plays out. This is a good order.
And I think, Ms. Chairman, that it's an important one, you know, for us to remember, because I think it makes a good example of this commission being willing to go to pretty great lengths in order to make things happen quickly so that the pipeline infrastructure could be placed, so the landowners could... accomplish what they wanted to accomplish by not having it interfere with their ag projects more than necessary. I think overall it's a pretty good example of regulatory work done well.
Yeah, and Randy brings out a point that I wasn't initially convinced of these reroutes because I thought that if the companies do a really good job of siting, there shouldn't be a lot of reroutes popping up. But when we got a little more detail in the informal about these reroutes, they talk to the landowner and they give them a general direction where the pipeline's going to go. But oftentimes from their first meeting with the landowner till when they actually show up there with the plows, the landowner will have decided they want to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I think what Randy pointed out, that it's a keep the construction schedule the way it is, as well as input anything from the landowners once they actually see where it's going to go.
Well, and they also noted in the informal that sometimes seeing it on a map and seeing it staked out on their land is a different perspective. And so if they want to have it changed, I mean, we want to meet the landowner's request whenever we can because they're the ones that have to live with it, and they hold the keys to getting this infrastructure in place. So,
And not to belabor the point, when there's an important basketball game coming up, as things continue to develop out there, sometimes, a landowner might have agreed to an easement somewhere, and by the time they get there and are staking it, the landowner has agreed to four or five other easements. And, now remembers this one and wishes it were over a little further because maybe they're negotiating something else yet, and so things change, too, very quickly up in that part of the country. And I feel good about this one.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
This is another feel-good one, the next item on the agenda. I move the commission assess a filing fee of $10,000 and issue a notice of filing, notice of informal hearing, and notice of opportunity for hearing in the joint application of MDU Company and Rough Rider Electric Cooperative for approval of an electric service area agreement and the resulting issuance of a certificate of public convenience and necessity to establish and designate service locations to be served by MDU and Rough Rider within and around the city of Dickinson, North Dakota. Case numbers PU 13-141 and PU 13-142.
Second.
So this is our first example of this since being on the commission, but it is the result of the Territorial Integrity Act that you probably voted on, Commissioner Christman. It's really encouraging as a public servant to see laws carried out so effectively and resulting in such good public outcomes for the constituents that you're serving. So I did note in some of the background information that the service agreement complies with NDCC 49-03-06 and is in the public interest because it will avoid misunderstanding and disagreement over areas to be served by each party and accomplish the legislative intent to encourage harmony and operational efficiency among electric providers, promote safety, discourage unreasonable duplication of electric facilities, assure adequate and reliable electric service, and provide antitrust immunity to the electric providers, and provide both parties with equitable participation in the provision of electric distribution service within undeveloped areas annexed to the city of Dickinson during the term of the agreement. And those are great outcomes for everybody. It's a real win-win, and it's exciting to see this, and I'm pleased to be able to be part of this now sitting in the commission.
Maybe hit the dates, too, the comments and requests for a hearing. So I think the two companies have worked it out. Now we've got the ability for if someone would request an official hearing on it, they have to have the comments to us by May 29th of this year. If not, we can do an informal on May 22nd at 1:30 when it's scheduled.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Anything else, Commissioner?
No.
Oh, stay on schedule, right? Okay, with that, I think that concludes our regular agenda. I did have one comment that I thought of during the meeting. I was actually in Fargo last week, and I'll be going over there tomorrow. We've all been tracking, I think, the diversion effort around the Fargo area, and the commission had a very controversial power line, CapEx 2020, that we voted on that went through there, and I've been working with Xcel Energy to making sure that any potential diversion to make sure that that line will not be affected. The company is making sure that they have the right poles in place that can handle any, you know, if the water sits in an area, certain areas, setbacks, fall, NERC requirements. So we've really focused to make sure the CapEx line is going to be built properly. But there are other lines over there. Otter Tail has lines that will be affected by the diversion. Cass County Electric has lines that will be affected by the diversion. We have telephone infrastructure that's going to be affected by the diversion. So I'm going to go over there and have a meeting with some of the groups because one of the things that I'd like my colleagues and us to look at is that as this diversion works itself out to what the final solution is, there'll be a lot of infrastructure that needs to get moved. And we want to make sure that the cost allocation for moving all of that infrastructure is considered. So I think the next PI meeting we have with Otter Tail, I'd ask that that be something they talk to us about and just get a feel for the price tag to moving some of this infrastructure. And I don't know if the commission has dealt with this at this scale recently, but it's one thing that I had not thought of outside the CapEx line to the last meeting that I was at, and I thought there could be some big price tags as infrastructure gets moved around, and we'll have to look at, you know, who best to pay for that. So.
Is there an estimate for the costs of this part of the whole project? Is that included already?
There are, Commissioner, there are numerous estimates based on numerous solutions right now.
Yeah.
And so that's part of what I hope to get a feel for is if they have a, you know, route around this part of Fargo with a retention pond, how that's going to affect things, just to get a feel for what the companies think the cost is going to be and then what their plan for cost recovery is, whether it goes back to the diversion authority to pay for those costs, whether it's something that gets spread loaded across other members of the investor-owned utility. But I think it's something to talk about early on, just to get a feel for it, because we will see it at a rate case at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at traditionally, when the Minot had all that flooding, I mean, we, in a rate case, we, for Xcel, that cost went throughout the whole region. When Fargo has had flooding in Grand Forks, the cost to improve that has gone without with through the whole region. But those were, I think, unplanned events. And so we'll have to look at how we view this diversion. Is this a good use of resources to, you know, prevent future cost, or is it something that should be paid for by the diversion authority? And I think your point of, but what is the cost up front, is of something that at least to be aware of as we figure this out. Because I think it, I mean, it could be minor for some, for Otter Tail, let's say, that may not be affected, but it could be significant for Xcel.
It'd be interesting to know if the companies have experiences in projects elsewhere and what their, how the process was handled in other locations where they've had big flood control projects. Right. Even Grand Forks, although there wasn't a diversion, but I don't know if there was infrastructure affected by their flood project.
We've seen cases up in the Devil's Lake area where companies had to raise their power lines, like we had with Great River Energy. But we, I guess, had not thought of the scope of what could be taking place in Fargo right now. So, but with that, I don't have any other comments. If Commissioner Christman or Dorchin. Okay, we'd open up if he has any questions.
So who have you got meetings scheduled with, or is there going to be one meeting? Or
well, I'm going to talk with Xcel Energy a little bit more. I'm going to talk with the City of Osgood, talk with Cass County Electric, talk with Otter Tail, talk to a couple of the phone co-ops down there, and just kind of get a – I've got a bunch of individual meetings set up. And one thing that Mark Nisbet is kind of leading the chamber group over there. So Mark is a key point for Xcel Energy, but Mark also has his thumb on the pulse pretty good of all the regions. So the first one is just going to be with Cass County, and we don't regulate them. But I would like just to get a feel for how they're going to approach it and then just see how it all plays out.
On the JF3, is there any specific region of Dickinson or area? Like, is it north of the city, south of the city, or is it just around the city? Or
yeah.
Do you know about?
I do. I have a map here, and it's all blocked off. They just expanded. I'll just hold it up, Dave, so you can kind of see. They expanded. The red is MDU, and the green is Rough Rider. So it looks to me like they just expanded out in all directions.
Sure. Okay. It looks like almost a square, but there was some, I would say
I
the...
I don't know what the old... Well, yeah, the old territory is the blue.
The blue.
Yeah. It expanded west, south, east. It didn't go much north, though. Or am I reading that wrong?
No, I think you're right. North to the top.
So, yep.
Yeah. Do you know, do you remember offhand how many of these are in place now? These,
I think it's 14 again. Yeah. That number comes to mind of how many we have in place. I look over at Pat. I think that's the right number. The number of these service area agreements we have, I think it was 13 last time, so this would be the 14th.
When it's approved, it'd be.
When it's approved, yeah. If it's approved. We'd want to prejudge, Dave. But,
yeah. Okay.
But no, that's like Commissioner Fedorchak said, it's really good to see the company and the well, the investor owner and the co-op have set this out. And there's been a lot of negotiation that's no doubt taken place to this point. And it really sets the stage so we don't find ourselves in disputes like we're in with Otter Tail versus North Central up in the northern part of the state. So it's I really like to see these.
On that footprint law, has that been approved now and signed, or is that still going through the process?
The footprint law is the one that was approved the last session where that once yeah. You think you could have additional things inside the corridor. I don't – Julie's been tracking this closer than me. Has that
it
been
was,
signed?
It was. It's. I believe it was effective as of April 2nd.
That is right.
I got a note that. From Alana saying that that new law was passed and is already effective.
Yeah, do you expect to need some tweaking of it, or are you happy with it then? Or
I think that the initial testimony that I had was I was not supportive of the initial language because they had a lot about intervener taking out the rights of interveners. Once they pulled out the intervener language, and it really they came and worked with the commission several different times. Julie was very involved in it. I'm happy the way it turned out, speaking for myself, once they tweaked some of the concerns we had.
I think it's really positive legislation. It creates four different buckets of categories, and depending on what category the reroute falls into, it dictates what steps the companies have to take on a simple reroute that's within the corridor, it's very quick and easy. And as the reroutes become more complicated, there's more requirements from the companies. I think most importantly, it clarifies for everybody so that the companies know what they have to do on the front end if they have a reroute potential, and we know what's expected of us. Some of this was handled in rule previously, and that worked fine, but this is more clear, and I felt good that it also got the attention of everyone in the legislature, at least a good share of the folks on the business and IBL committees, so that we have the reassurance that this is the direction that the policymakers want to go. This is how they see things moving forward in terms of the regulatory process, and so that we aren't doing things either more strict or too loose in terms of how we're handling these kinds of changes. So I think it was a good process and a good result.
I think, basically that in all those buckets, as long as all the parties are in agreement, as long as their criteria of all the SHPO and those things is all met, they really can continue to move forward. If one of those isn't met, then they have to come back to the commission for some type of decision. So that's kind of what I always thought the safety valve in this, that there's a safety valve where if there's something not right, they have to come back for a commission determination within, I think it's 15 days or something. That kind of gives us the safety valve on it. Because as we're just talking about XL, their, you know, this CapEx line, they may have to make some minor variations of it depending what the diversion is, but as long as it's within the corridor with the same landowners, they can do those things without having to come back and slow the timeline down. That's probably the closest example that this might affect.
Well, since we're on the subject of the legislature, the Senate made some changes to the Public Service Commission budget. I assume it's going to a conference committee. I haven't double-checked where it is.
We're very thankful the Senate made the changes they did. They added back one of our weights and measures position. They fully reinstated our legal defense fund and actually added a little bit to it. What else did they add into there? Randy and Julie were both down there, but the Senate made very...
maintained our IT function in-house.
Right. So all the basically the things that we asked for in the Senate, they instituted back at some level. We've all three been working our networks trying to figure out when the conference committee is, but we don't know. But speaking for myself, I'm patient to let them. They seem like they have bigger fish to fry down there right now. And as long as they get our budget worked out in the end, I'm happy.
And Mr. Crispin, Randy, you had at one time talked about the idea of maybe increasing the legal part, the legal fees. And it assumes the Senate, it looked like the Senate has done that. Put some more money toward legal fees.
They did. They substantially increased it. And I think it would, if that can be held, throughout the conference committee, it will put us in a great position to make sure that we are able to properly defend the state sovereignty.
I can't think of any reason why the Senate may have listened more closely to the rationale on that issue. Can you, Brian?
I think that you and I did a better job in our testimony.
I have no idea why.
It was a good meeting, though, wasn't it? We'll see, though. It is going to, the final budget, as the governor signs off on it, will set the stage in the commission because there are some big things that are at play right now. Our whole weights and measures program, future will be decided. The way we're going to defend these legal cases, we've got those positions in pipeline safety and public utilities. It's going to be very significant when this finally comes out because there's been a lot of things that have been kind of moved down the road that will kind of come to head now. So.
And they even brought up the idea of a new metrology lab.
We sent paperwork down on that to reinstate metrology, so we know that could. We've heard a lot that people would like the metrology lab back with North Dakota, so we'll do what they ask. All right. Thank you, Dave. I did have a couple announcements that I did forget. We have this afternoon, we have a formal hearing at 1:30 on Earth Harvest Mills. The commission has issued a cease and desist order, and they want to come tell us why that might not be needed. We have also at 3 o'clock today an informal with Telluride Corporation. Our big event for next week in Commissioner Fedorchak's portfolio, we'll be doing public input sessions around the entire state of North Dakota, 7 p.m. on Monday, noon on Tuesday. We'll be in Minot State in the University Avenue Administrative Room. We'll be at UND in Gamble Hall, and we'll be at North Dakota State at the EML Hall. So Randy's covering Minot both days. Julie and I are flip-flopping in Fargo and Grand Forks. And so we look forward to having the public come to our meeting. Actually, it's XL's meeting. So, and with that, I have anything else going on? Oh, exactly. That's right. 5 o'clock today, we have a special meeting. We're going to be talking with Mr. Seeby, our attorney, on the coal lawsuits. So we filed our initial summary brief on the policy memos. Was it last week? We filed week before last? Reply brief. And then we'll be doing the same Friday with the next, the second case. So all these things are taking place at the same time. So thank you, Esther. Okay, with that, do you want to go right into the admin meeting? Julie?
Sure.
All right, with that, we'll close the meeting.